I'd like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save and except Councilor McDermott due to illness.
Thank you. We have a pretty heavy agenda this evening, so there aren't any announcements other than to wish all of my colleagues on council and staff best of 2016 and all the residents of Fort Erie the same thing. We've got some pretty interesting items on our agenda for 2016, and I think that we've got a lot of work to do, but we've got good support here, and I think that we're going to be able to chart a very interesting course for the town over the next 12 months. So I look very much forward to that, and this year we'll be able to look back upon some major achievements, starting with this evening. There is an addendum, and it's with respect to some information that was inadvertently included in report CDS 06-2016 that has been removed. It's been recirculated. And so that relates to a series of emails that were had questions with respect to that. Just bear in mind that the some of that is confidential, and so make sure that your questions reflect that. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest this evening? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Under public meetings, the Building Code Act, the proposed increase in building permit fees, I'd like to declare a conflict. As the company I work for, we work for a lot of contractors in the town, and there may be a conflict arising from this.
Don't see it, but that's certainly your prerogative, Councillor Luberts. Any other disclosures? Okay, we do have public notice with respect to the 2016 budget meeting schedule. We're down to a meeting on Wednesday of this week, January 13th. That's the library and the EDTC budgets. On Wednesday, January the 27th, we have the general levy operating budget, and on Wednesday, February 3rd, if necessary, a further meeting to try to finalize our budget for 2016. All those meetings start at 6 o'clock. They are all held in council chambers. I did neglect to mention that we have former Councillor John Hill here this evening. Good evening. Welcome to the chamber. It's probably an interesting perspective for you down there. We have a couple of public meetings this evening. The first has to do with the Building Code Act, and it's with respect to the proposed increase in building permit fees. And Mr. Jennings, I understand you have a brief presentation.
So this public meeting is a requirement of the Ontario Building Code Act when a municipality is considering changing building permit fees. The proposed building permit fee increase will help building department revenues get closer to the anticipated cost of the operating of the department. According to the Building Code Act, we have to provide notice for the public meeting. So this was done in the Fort Erie Times on December 17th, 2015. So that satisfied the town's legal requirements under the Act to meet that. In addition to that, notice was also posted on the town's website, and notification was provided to the town's frequent builders, so they were aware of this. So the permit fee increases allows the municipalities to collect fees that represent the anticipated reasonable costs to administer the Building Code Act and the regulations. So in 2015, the permit fees were increased to bring the department closer to the cost-neutral status, and council at that time approved an annual increase of the fees equal to the consumer price indexing. So that's what this proposal is that CPI index of 0.9% this year. Some background on that, the building permit fees were formally studied in 2006 by BMA Management Consulting, where it was recommended at that time that annual fee increases be undertaken. From 2006 to 2011, the proposed increases were not approved, which resulted in a 13.6% of increases to the permit fees that were forgone. In 2015, the permit council did approve a fee increase. The highest increase was 10% to some of the classifications of building permits, where some of the different classifications did not receive any increase. Most, just for information, most of the municipalities are already at, or they're striving to become that cost neutral. So with the changes to the building permit fees, with that 0.9%, that works out to approximately a penny a square foot on most of our classifications. As you can see from the chart, we're going from in assembly occupancy, $1.35 a square foot to $1.36 a square foot. We do see a $1 increase on our minimum permit fee from $125 to $126. And we have a variety of different classifications that are under a 65 cent a square foot charge that do not see any increase. In that chart, you'll also see the regional averages, and you can see that we're still well below the regional averages. With some of the flat dollar charges, we do see a slightly higher increase in fees. So public pools are going up $3, the private in-ground pools are going up $1, and our above-ground pools are going up $1. So future fee increases is proposed that the permit fees receive an annual fee increase, again, equal to the consumer price indexing. So that'll be reviewed every year. And annually, the building permit fees be reviewed to ensure that we are continue to strive towards that cost neutral goal. That's everything I have in my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jennings. Do any members of council have any questions of Mr. Jennings? Then I do. With respect to the proposed increases, this is part of a proposal, or this is part of something that's already been legislated by bylaw, that the increases will occur automatically each year in accordance with the increase in the cost of living index?
No, every year when we do, if we are proposing that cost of our consumer price indexing, we will have to have that public meeting because we don't know what that index will, or that increase will be.
Right.
So we'll have to have that public meeting every year.
It has to be approved by council?
Yes, it will.
All right. And when do you anticipate that will be coming forward?
This year's bylaw will be just coming forward next week, January 18th.
So what happens this evening?
Yes.
And perhaps you've indicated what the regional averages are in the one graph there,
yeah.
And presumably you know what the fees are for our neighboring communities, Port Colborne, Niagara Falls, Welland. How would they bear up with what we're charging now?
Depends on the classification. The building code are the different, we have different classifications for the different type of construction. So for an example, on a single family dwelling, we are, so Port Colborne is $1.05 a square foot, and Welland is $1.13 a square foot. This is their 2014 rates. I did not have time to get this may be the 2015 rates. But I know some of the municipalities are going through fee increases this year as well. So I don't know what their proposed rates are for this year.
I wonder if you could circulate to members of council what information you have relative to the 2015 rates for the municipalities in Niagara.
Happy to.
Any other councillors have any questions arising out of that? Okay, that's fine for now, Mr. Jennings. We will see if the public has any comments with respect to this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do any members of the public wish to address council with respect to the proposed increase in building permit fees? There being no interested in commenting, then I'm going to declare this public meeting closed. Thank you very much, Mr. Jennings. And then that's going to take us to the next, public meeting, which is the public meeting for the official plan amendment and property rezoning regarding former industrial lands on Helena Street. So there will be a member of staff that will provide some information to council and to the audience with respect to these proposed changes. And then we will ask any questions that council has of the staff member. And then if there is anyone in the public that wishes to address council on that, I will ask them to come forward and stay and respond, if we can, to any questions you raise. So we will start. I see Kira Dolch is here, and I presume that you're going to be providing some background information. Please come forward. Good evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Worship. The purpose of this amendment is to change the town zoning bylaw and official plan designation. The official plan designation will go from urban residential and commercial to a special policy area industrial business park designation, and the zoning will go from a highway commercial C3 zone and a neighborhood development ND zone to a site-specific dry industrial zone. The environmental conservation overlay zones will not change as a result of this amendment. Notification of the January 11th public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing a notice in the December 17, 2015 edition of the Times newspaper. In addition, to satisfy the notification requirements for the town-initiated amendments approved by Council on May 6, 2013, the following additional measures were undertaken. Notice of the proposed amendment was posted on the town's website, Twitter, and Facebook page. Notice of the public meeting was sent to the Ridgeway, Bridgeburg, Crystal Beach BIAs. Notice the amendment was advertised on a billboard at the corner of Municipal Center Drive and Garrison Road. Notice of the amendment was posted at the library branches, Leisureplex, Museum, and in the Town Hall atrium. In addition to the above, the owners of the properties directly impacted by the proposed amendment, i.e. a change to the zoning directly onto their property, were hand-delivered notice of the public meeting on December 17, 2015. The owners of the properties that were directly impacted but the lands were vacant were mailed the notice of the public meeting on the same date. This is an area photographed subject neighborhood. The subject lands are located on the east and west side of Helena Street in the Kraft neighborhood. The area consists of a mix of existing commercial, residential, and industrial uses. The subject lands are located south of Garrison Road on Helena Street and incorporate 10 separate properties on the east and west side of Helena, and they're outlined in yellow. Of these 10 properties, 7 are actively operating as a distribution company, a computer repair facility, a plastic molding company, an amusement company, a machine shop, an environmental management company, a canine training facility, a vinyl deck company, a transport trucking business, an international trade company, and a transport and warehousing company. 3 of the properties are not actively operating or are not developed. This is an area photograph of the subject properties. The amendment area is shown in yellow hatching and excludes the areas of environmental protection from the subject lands. The amendment area will be redesignated to a special policy area and rezoned to a site-specific dry industrial zone. This is a photograph of the property looking southwest along Helena Street. This is a photograph of the subject property looking northwest along Helena Street. And this is looking at the subject lands along Helena Street looking southwest, or southeast, sorry. The subject property is designated commercial, shown in red, urban residential, shown in yellow, and environmental protection, which is shown in the brown, as well as environmental conservation, which is the dashed hatching area. An official plan amendment is required to permit the special policy area. The environmental protection area is not part of the amendment area and will continue to be designated environmental protection. The environmental conservation overlay designation will also continue to remain on the properties, but is included in the amendment areas as development within these land may be possible subject to an environmental review or approval. This slide shows the natural and cultural heritage map. In the official plan. These designations, which is the environmental protection, environmental conservation, are not changing as a result of this amendment. The natural heritage corridor, which is shown in yellow, a yellow circle or yellow tubular shape, is also located on the subject lands. This corridor will continue to be identified on Schedule C of the town's official plan. The proposed zoning bylaw amendment is to change the zoning from highway commercial C3 zone to a site-specific dry industrial zone, and also from a neighborhood development ND zone to a site-specific dry industrial zone. The environmental conservation overlay zone again will remain unchanged. This is the proposed text for the official plan amendment. And what it states is that these lands can be used for low-intensive industrial uses on private servicing if required in the urban area boundary. This text also requires adherence to separation distances identified in the Ministry's D6 guidelines. The Ministry separation distances provide guidelines on how close different types of industry can be located to a sensitive land use such as residential land. This is the proposed text for the zoning bylaw amendment. There are two sections in the amendment, and they are uses that are permitted on private services and uses that are permitted on full services, full municipal services. Uses on full services include a variety of industrial type uses. The lands on private services are limited to uses that are reliant on services for employees only, and not for the actual industry itself. And that's generally what the text says as you go through it. In addition, on the last part of the amendment, all the proposed uses, whether or not they're publicly or privately serviced, whether or not full or private services, would be subject to the minimum separation distances identified in the MOE's D6 guidelines due to the proximity of residential lands, and would be subject to the restriction of no outside storage, again, due to the proximity of residential lands in the area. Thank you. This concludes my presentations. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dolch. Any members of council have any questions, Councillor Nutt?
Thank you. Ms. Dolch, can you go back to the land that has the lot number designations on it, please? That map. Yep, right there. So G3489 backs onto, it's mostly covered in provincially significant wetland according to the other map that you had shown, but it abuts this ND here, which is the amendment area. And G3489 that borders Garrison Road, I'm assuming these are, is that one full lot or two?
There's a lot that fronts onto Garrison, mm-hmm. That has some property on the back half, and as you read through the report, that's the property who's they've asked for their property to be removed from the amendment. The reason being they're not sure what they want to do with that property, and they're not sure they like the industrial designation coming forward. So it is all one piece property onto Garrison.
Okay, thank you. That actually clarifies my question. Thank you. That's what I was looking for, the clarification on if that was one owner in two separate properties, or if that was one complete property.
Yeah, it's one owner, and it's separated by his property, unfortunately, separated by a wetland as well in the middle, as well as Garrison Road.
Thank you.
Any other councillors? Ms. Dolch, I wonder if you could go to slide 7, somewhat on the same issue. So everything that's in red right now is zoned commercial.
That's correct.
That includes this individual who owns property that fronts on Garrison Road. So there was some suggestion as to how we could deal with that individual. And that was to simply defer that property.
That was their request, to have it deferred, just submitted in writing. They asked for that property to be deferred. Actually, they asked for the whole amendment to be deferred,
right.
Which I didn't support, only because there are people waiting for this amendment to occur. So we considered, my proposal was that we considered the deferral for his property.
And so the uses that will be permitted, according to Appendix 3, and the graphic that you showed are expanded if, in fact, sanitary service is available.
That's correct, because there's a couple properties along Helena that do have full servicing.
And this official plan designations right now, they were changed in 2011?
By town council in 2006, but formally by the regional council in 2011.
I see. So this has been in the works. Zoning change made a few years.
That's correct. In 2013, we brought the town zoning bylaw into conformity with the OP, and that's where a number of issues resulted.
Hence this application now.
That's correct.
Any questions arising out of that by members of council? Thank you very much, Ms. Dolch. Now, if there's anyone who wishes to address council with respect to the presentation or the report that we're going to be dealing with later on regarding the official plan amendment and property rezoning, you may come forward. Want to come forward? There being no one, then we'll declare this public meeting closed, and there is a report further on in our agenda where we will deal with this evening. So that takes us to the consent agenda. And does anyone wish any of the reports in the consent agenda removed from that package? There being none, would someone like to move that the consent agenda items be approved? Councillor Nutt. Are there any questions or comments with respect to any of those reports in the consent agenda? Those are the request for extension of draft plan approval for River Trail, Fort Erie Communities in Bloom program update, proposed amendment to the town's official plan for these Helena Street lands, and the extension of draft plan approval for King Street draft plan of subdivision. Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. On the report CDS-02-2016 regarding communities in Bloom, the second that, it asks that staff meet with communities in Bloom relative to the assessing the recommendations of the International Communities in Bloom judges. And I'm just wondering, we received a report from Communities in Bloom and it made recommendations, and I can't remember, did council get that, did all of council get that report, or did that just come through Communities in Bloom? Because the reason I'm asking is I think it would be a good idea if the rest of council did see at least the recommendations that the judges made.
I believe that we received that, and so that we have an understanding of what the objectives are with respect to the involvement of staff and the communities in Bloom.
Okay, thank you. I look forward to meeting with staff, and hopefully we'll make the changes necessary. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? I think before we move on, Councillor Nutt?
Yes, I don't have any questions in regard to the communities in Blooms, but under CDS-04-2016, which is the King Street subdivision draft plan extension, I just have some questions. I guess I can direct these to Mr. Brady. Just to give some background on the report, the appeal was over in 2009. The building permit was issued in 2011. There's been no significant uptake on this, despite a lack of success for people building similar style subdivisions in other parts of the town. It's recommended in here that we approve a 2-year, I believe. And what I was wondering is what in the next 2 years would be accomplished by this builder that he hasn't done in the last 7 years or 6 years? Go ahead, Mr. Brady.
Mr. Brady.
Through to Councillor Nutt. I take with the tone and tenor of your question that there may be some concern that this has been lagging. I can tell you that staff share your concern in terms of the fact that this subdivision has been lagging. And that's why we're sent the second that, as you could see on the recommendation report, says that council considers denying any future extensions of draft plan approval if significant movement isn't made towards registration by November 13th, 2017. That's staff's way of firing the cannon over the bow, if you will. It will put subdivider on notice that they have to do something before the end of 2017. Council always has an alternative, if they wish to, they could simply require that date to be November 13th, 2016, which would be a one-year extension. That option is always available to council. And the second, that doesn't bind the council in a year or 2 years' time, but it does send a message.
Councilor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd be more comfortable, I don't know about my colleagues, but I'd really only like to see a one-year approved for this. The fact that he's citing that there's not significant uptake in Fort Erie for the style housing when on Coral Avenue in Stevensville, we've seen it sell out very quickly. We've seen great success with Ridgeway by the Shores. Fort Erie is a great place to live. I don't think the developer is serious and putting in the effort.
Well, why don't we
development, but that's just my own personal feeling.
Why don't we remove this from the package and then we'll deal with it separately, and then we can have some further discussions about that, and you can have some further comments, Councillor Nutt, if you, Mr. Passero may wish to comment as well.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments then with respect to the items that are left in the package? I do want to say that we very much appreciate the work that the Communities in Bloom Committee has done. I know the number of you are here this evening, and certainly the report that we received on that is quite comprehensive, and the booklet that was attached to our report, very informative, and certainly gives us a good indication of what went on during the past year and what some of the challenges are for us going forward and what the opportunities are for us. So thank you for all of you here who participated in that Communities in Bloom initiative, and thank you, Ms. Hansen, for your involvement. Any other questions on the items in the consent agenda item, save for the one that's been removed? If not, I'll call the question on those items. So all consent agenda items except CDS 04, all those in favor? That is carried. So now, Councillor Nutt, did you want to move? Madam Clerk, do we need to move CDS 04 separately?
That report, four? Yes.
Okay.
On the floor.
Okay, back to you.
The developer in his letter was requesting a three-year and wanted this extended to the letter we received October 6, 2015, is requesting a three-year on this. Prior councils have granted numerous extensions here. I find it hard with the increase in real estate sales and all the development that we with over 300 building permits issued last year alone that this developer person that find hardship in a town that had a very successful year last year. So I'm a little hesitant with his reasoning saying that there's just no uptake.
Did you have a question, Mr. Brady?
Yeah.
Mr. Brady, would you like to comment?
Can you comment on that? Mr. Brady, your thoughts, please.
Through to Councillor Nutt, you're correct in your assessment that this year's building permit activity has been robust. We've believe the number that we're now at in terms of actual new building starts is 95 units, which is a considerable number. We're having them in a variety of different locations in the municipality, and a number of the developers are quite, and home builders are quite happy. And as I've reported to this council before, in 2016 was the first year since I've been here in the last 4 years that we've had considerable amount of investment putting in the ground by developers. So there seems to be a lot of activity, which drive around town, you can see the construction that's going on in terms of sewers and water lanes and roads, and et cetera. So I agree with you. It's certainly up to council's decision. I would caution council to at least provide some extension of draft plan approval for this particular developer, be it 1 year or 2 years, as the case may be. And if council so decided to change the recommendation, the first recommendation, I would hope that they would also change the second recommendation so that the years would coincide.
Councillor Nutt, back to you. I'm thinking that if we want to do something with this, we should probably defer it to give the developer at least an opportunity to address this. there may be some answers, there may not be some answers, but I think if we're going to an opportunity to at least address us.
Yeah, I'd just like to gather some additional information. Defer it until...
Before you get there, Councillor Passero did have his hand up and he wanted to make a comment. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Member DeCoppin, and thank you, Councillor Nutt, for just holding off on that deferral motion so I could speak. I think in isolation, I agree 100% with all of your comments. I think the one X factor involved in this development is the County Fair Mall property. And I think that could be a reason why you may see a lack of uptake and maybe this particular developer, and I have not spoken with the developer, but that might be one of the reasons why he may be holding off or trying to find some stalling tactics to drink more water to see where that's going. I'm hoping that we'll have some answers on that property over the next 1.5 to 2 years as well. I'm comfortable with the 2 years, definitely not three. I think one would kind of be, it kind of goes against, I think, what we've said as a council in helping developers, especially in the absence of having their comments. But I'd be happy to support the 2 years tonight. I think the second that is enough to light that fire, as Mr. Brady has mentioned, to let him know that we do mean business here. This is not going to be extension after extension after extension. I'm prepared to support the 2 years tonight, but if that deferral motion is to come forward or a motion to go down to 1 year, I would consider that as well.
I think your comments, Councillor Passero, are well made. We know that the County Fair Mall recently changed hands. We know that they're looking for some plans to move forward with respect to that property, and that may dovetail into this particular property. But Councillor Lubert, you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redica. Just looking at under background, in 2011, the developer was issued conditional building permits, and I, being a member of council in 2011, I don't recall what the conditions were, but obviously there must have been some concern about the development itself back then. And I'm wondering if Mr. Brady can just give us a little review on what those conditions were back in 2011.
Mr. Brady, can you help us with that?
I can certainly try. The conditional building permits were for model homes. So these were model homes which were built on the property at the time, and they continue to be model homes to date. They aren't occupied, and we have actually a couple concerns about how they've been treated through the time, but they're conditional permits in the fact that they are model homes.
Councillor Lubert? And they can't be occupied, correct, Mr. Brady?
For these homes to be occupied, we would need to the building inspectors would need to review them one more time to make sure that they were up to code, and then a final building permit would have to be issued.
Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Brady. Mr. Brady, have you spoken with the developer recently, other than obviously I know that they've submitted a request for the extension, but I'm just wondering if you've spoken with them quite recently and they've given you any indication as to what their plan is.
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councillor. I personally have not spoken to the developer. My staff, I understand, have, and their opinion is well expressed in the letter. They just don't think that the market is appropriate at this time, and they'd like to hold off until sometime in the future. That will make those model homes that were issued in 2011 2 years older, or older than that, for that matter, and that continues to be a bit of a concern of ours as well. Just as an aside, I can tell you that we have changed the way we deal with model homes now, and model homes now, when a model home is issued, we have those homes tied to sewers and water and electricity at the time to try to deal with issues like having them as model homes for long periods of time. That seems to be working a lot better, and the development community seems to be happy with that as well.
Thank you.
Okay, Councillor. The only one that hasn't spoken is Councillor Butler. Did you have any comments? Because otherwise, I'm going to go back to Councillor Lubberts. Okay, Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Under alternatives, and I guess I'm going to direct my question to Mr. Brady again. The first paragraph, it said that a two-year extension is optimal to ensure the applicant has sufficient time to prepare and submit detailed design work. Is that not why we gave them the extension the last time?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Lubert? Yes, it is. We try to be as flexible with the development community as possible to try to provide them with as much of courtesy as we can in terms of a number of things, but in particularly in extending draft plan subdivisions. But as you can see from the alternatives that have been brought to Council's attention as part of this report, clearly we've identified that it's Council's prerogative. They could extend it for a shorter period of time if they wished, or for that matter, for a longer period of time. And then we'd be happy to pass that information back to the developer.
Councilor Lubberts? Okay. I understand, Councilor Nutt?
Yes. Just based on the dialogue we've had here with a little more clarification coming out versus some of the verbiage in the report, I'm willing to support the staff recommendation of the 2 years, but not anything further than that. And like Councillor Pissarro said, hopefully something gets done with the County Fair Mall and this developer capitalizes on that activity.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Mr. Brady, I think if this is passed, and it sounds very much like it's going to be, I would suggest that you contact the developer and indicate to the developer the depth of the ice that he's skating on right now, because there isn't, it would appear that if there isn't some significant movement over the next 2 years, that this council may not be extending further. So I think that probably captures what most of us are thinking. Okay, if there is no further discussion, then I'll call the question. All those in favor of the recommendations? None opposed? That is carried. And that takes us to Community and Development Services. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Community and Development Services is now open. We have one presentation this evening from Ms. Donna Hind, who is the principal of the Planning Partnership, and she is going to give the final report for the Bay Beach Master Plan. Before we get started, however, we have a recommendation on the floor that we extend the delegation beyond 10 minutes for an additional 10 minutes. Can I have the mover?
Madam Chair, I've spoken to Ms. Hind. I don't think she's going to be able to do this in 20 minutes.
At least not.
Watch. You're going to try? Okay, and I have the button to turn it off, so. So that I'll move that then.
Thank you. All those in favor? You can state your name for the record, please, and also after your presentation, if you can stay at the podium so that if our colleagues have any questions, they can ask them of you.
My name's Donna Hind. I'm a partner at the Planning Partnership. I am thrilled to be making this presentation to Council and the public. I'm here with all the members of my study team, John Linton, Lisa Campbell, and Mark Coburn. So as you will recall, many of you have seen a couple of these slides. I'm going to go through. I'm desperately going to try and keep it to the 20-minute mark. This site was strategically purchased by the town to enhance public access, to get an acceptable return on investment, to create a mixed-use destination, and most important, to provide a catalyst for investment opportunities. After 14 years of planning, the Bay Beach Property Council asked for a master plan that would achieve broad-based community consensus, short-term, long vision, recommendations for the next 5 years. You wanted to make sure it was a mixed-use destination and it was a catalyst for stimulating growth. I'm going to go through the final master plan in four parts. I'm going to talk about what we've done to talk to the community. I'm going to give a summary of how we think Bay Beach is a catalyst for revitalizing Crystal Beach. go through in a fair amount of detail the final plan and then finish up with the costs, the revenues, and the phasing. As you know, we framed the work that we've done around three consultation events, the last one being November 5th, where we talked about the final plan and the implementation strategy. We have honestly dealt with hundreds of inputs over the last few months, hundreds of emails, telephone calls, three workshops. This is our third presentation to council. We've had tremendous input at each one of the three workshops, exactly as our town staff team advised me the very first day that I was on the project to expect tremendous turnout at these events. And that's indeed what we got, as well as a really good online forum of posting information through the website. I really want to especially thank the many, many, many hours we spent with our working group, including the councillor, two councillors and our councillor, Lubert and the mayor and town staff put in just a phenomenal amount of work. And most, the person who was right by my side every step of the way was Signe Hansen. And it's one thing for me to make unreasonable expectations on the part of my own team to be available nights, evenings, holidays, Sunday mornings. But when I send an email to town staff and I get a response on a Sunday morning or while they're on holidays, it really is. You have to know how unusual that is. I work for municipalities all across the province for many years. That's really unusual. And we had a fantastic community focus group, and I think Lynn is here tonight, and they too were right by our side every step of the way, and we had some very tough sessions along the way. So a little bit of the journey, we started at our first workshop with scribbles and scratches. We came out of that workshop with the eight key directions that we used as our guiding framework for the duration of the exercise. We came back to the second workshop and wanted to put those three concepts back in front of the community. It wasn't till the third workshop where we presented the final draft master plan and we asked people if it represented how we could move forward in a positive way. And I'm happy to report that we did get broad-based community support for that when we posed that question. So how is it a catalyst for revitalizing Crystal Beach? We did John Linton help us estimate the number of beach users over a season. Even with thousands of people visiting the beach, he concluded that there's very little economic impact. He estimated that people spend about $9 per person, which is very small. In other projects that I've worked with John on, that number could be $30 per person. So the tourist expenditure is very low. And that's because we heard, these are not my words, these are people that we talk to, words that talk about the Bay Beach property being depressing, that it's time to move forward, people use the lake as a toilet. And so we think with the Bay Beach plan being part of a larger revitalization strategy for Crystal Beach, that it can generate significantly higher revenue, we think in the order of $2 to $2.5 million a year. All right, now I'm going to walk you through the final Bay Beach master plan. I'm going to go through the plan and all of its component parts. I'm going to talk about infill, and then I'm going to talk about the parking strategy. So in terms of the overall plan, infilling in the northeast lot, parking in the town-owned land that would remain in the northwest lot, as well as event parking. I'll go through parking in a bit more detail shortly. Talk about the upper beach, the lower beach, numbered as number four, the Ashwood entrance, and then the pedestrian priority zone on Erie Road. So the upper beach, a significant proportion of the upper beach is maintained as green space and dune restoration along the east edge of the property. There's walkways and terraces, and through detailed design, we'll explore a whole variety of options for the walkways and terraces that could be permeable materials. The planning partnership is well recognized for the work that its landscape architects do in making sure our designs are sustainable and enhance runoff. So we'll explore what those materials can be in detailed design. Admission kiosk at the entrance to the ramp down to the lower beach, washrooms, showers, lockers, that building that is central in that gray paved area, children's play area up in the top right, an enhanced or renovated lobster house as a pergola, an open-air pergola, site for heritage interpretation, and then accommodating maintenance access both along the far east edge of the property and through the middle of the upper beach. So a little bit on the maintenance access. As you know, there's currently maintenance vehicles that come along the Schooley Road access. It's an historic point of access for cottagers to have access to their beach. We're suggesting that we maintain that historic access for cottage owners, clearly sign the route with cautionary notes related to the dune restoration, but that access by town vehicles, EMS, vendors, event vehicles occur internal through the site, so not on that Schooley Road access. I've shown you these images before, Gateway to Bay Beach from Eastwood Avenue, the Lobster House repurposed as an open-air pavilion for vendors, heritage displays, and picnic tables. The Erie Road pedestrian zone, a whole zone from Bay Beach over to the event parking and the Crystal Beach Town Center safe, where there's safe pedestrian crossings all the way along, convenient drop-off at the Bay Beach site on the south side, slow travel speeds, continuous sidewalks to provide safe access between the event parking and the site, and locations for food trucks on the south side of Erie Road. So as a pedestrian focused shared street with continuous sidewalks right over to Erie Road. The lower beach, we've shown beach mats along the route, along the beach, including parallel to the water's edge as well as perpendicular to provide access to directly to the water's edge, areas to protect the toad habitat, and interpretive signage to clearly describe to the community what we're trying to achieve at Bay Beach. The environmental strategy is still comprised of seven components about enhancing hibernation areas, about removing the above grade portions of the dance hall foundation, protecting the shoreline, enhancing localized natural dune formation, incorporating interpretive signage, planting native trees and shrubs, and implementing a larger scale stewardship plan for the whole Abano Bay area, because as I said this many times, Bay Beach is about 125 meters within 6,000 meters of Abano Bay. So we have to start to think about the bay as a much bigger context. With respect to Blue Flag certification, it's not recommended at this time, primarily because of the location of the storm sewer right now, costing in the order of $5 million to relocate it, in addition to the years of environmental approvals that would be required, and we're not sure where it could be relocated to at this time. However, when we go through the criteria for Blue Flag certification, many of the criteria, I think I counted 26 of the Blue Flag criteria, can be met by the Bay Beach Master Plan. And I've listed some of the things that we would hope would come out of the implementation of the Bay Beach Master Plan, which achieves the intent of Blue Flag certification. So a little bit about the wall. Low stacked armor stone wall, and this is why I brought everybody from the team here to be able to answer questions that you may have about any of this in detail. So Mark Coburg will answer the details about the shore wall. Low stacked armor stone, about a meter and a half. It's to take up the grade difference between the upper and the lower beach. It's to protect the town's investment in the Bay Beach property. We will reuse or maintain the existing block wall, the existing block, if it can be reused, but I would absolutely defer to the shoreline coastal engineer to advise whether that's prudent or not. But the plan has been modified in response to comments that we've received to include a buffering strip of vegetation between the boardwalk and the low shore wall along the east edge of the property. So you can see a green strip between the brown semicircle and the blue band on the east side of that the plan. We are maintaining the existing seawall that's in front of the Lobster House, and I'm going to come back to how we're reusing that, and that's the big red arrow on the left side of that slide. And the arrow on the right side shows the existing concrete blocks at the back of the lower beach where we will reuse them where possible. and that will remove the above grade portions of the dance hall foundation and gain 3,500 square feet of beach and about 3,500 square feet per dunes. So the shore wall, the L-shaped shore wall that's in front of the lobster house is existing, and we're using it as the foundation for a beach terrace. The existing foundation, dance hall foundation, removed, about 7,000 square feet of beach and dunes are created. This image shows the stacked stone wall, dune formation against the stacked stone wall, and trying to protect the hibernation areas. We had a request from some stakeholders to replace the shore wall with steel sheet pile wall. And the advice that Mark Coburg gives the team is that the existing L-shaped wall is in good condition. It's not financially prudent to remove an existing structure and replace it with steel sheet pile. That removing the wall and replacing it with sheet pile will disrupt the hibernation areas and increase dune temperature. We had a question from the community wondering, will the deck interfere with wave and wind, requiring more protection? And Mark's advice to the team is that it will not change the beach condition. And he says that removal of the existing L-shaped wall will jeopardize the stability of the neighboring shore wall. So that's why we're maintaining the existing L-shaped wall, and we're using it as the foundation on which to put the terrace. This diagram shows in green the areas of dune that are planned along that low stacked wall, about 10,000 square feet. Just when we measure the green area, that includes the area that's under the through the dance hall foundation. So infilling the neighborhood, supported by a comprehensive parking strategy. So we're suggesting that the northeast parking lot be sold and developed for either residential development or an inn. We showed these through many of our consultation events, this scenario showing 14 beach townhouses that are along four on Eastwood and the rest on Erie Road, three stories in height, or a four-story apartment or inn. We've shown various versions of precedents, this from a community that shows townhouses on the town side of the road, and you can see a glimpse of the water on the right side of the slide, or this a precedent for a small inn or an apartment. In terms of the parking strategy, we have a 10-point parking strategy to locate parking close to or in downtown Crystal Beach on lands that are zoned commercial, very important detail. That parking can be located on private lands that are zoned for commercial, that it can be, parking can be temporary, event, seasonal. We would have an option to prohibit on-street parking on some streets for beach visitors in defined areas close to the beach on some or all summer weekends, pay for parking, pay more the closer you are to the beach, enforce parking regulations, provide drop-off at Bay Beach, connect all the parking lots with a sidewalk, and landscape all the parking lots. So as I think we presented at the last council presentation, that there has been interest on the part of the landowners in the yellow blocks that are numbered 1, 2, and 3 to provide exactly the kind of parking we were hoping for, event-based parking within a 5-minute walk of the park. So finally, costs. The estimate of capital costs. This is a detailed breakdown of various items of the construction cost of the Bay Beach Park. It's in the order of $2.2 million. We had a question from the community about giving a more detailed breakdown of the costs, and we do not do that in publicly release documents that we hope to tender, the town hopes to tender for construction. So we have lumped some of the key components to give you a bit of an idea of where the $2.2 million is allocated. The sources of funding for that capital cost come in part from selling the northeast lot, plus the town's parkland reserve, the development charge reserve, making an application to the Niagara region's lakefront enhancement strategy and incentive funding, service clubs and associations, and community fundraising. on that this slide too, I had a tremendous day of discussions about the larger Lake Erie waterfront strategy, and you have some phenomenal community groups in this community that are doing great work. I had the chance to learn about some of the environmental work that's being planned for at the Waverly Beach Park by community groups. And so this is exactly the kind of thing that we would hope would happen at Bay Beach. The revenues from Bay Beach operation to cover some of the cost of ongoing operation come from these sources: beach admission, parking revenues and fines, vending permits, in addition to the taxes that would be generated depending on the development scenario that is pursued. So when we look at looking at the various scenarios, we have the revenues from the beach operations in the first column, plus the revenues from taxes from development on that northeast lot, giving total revenues, and then that's offset by the cost of beach operation, which we'll talk about in just a second, gives a surplus to the municipality from operations with each one of the three development scenarios that we suggested. In terms of the operating cost, this is based on a strategy to manage use, to ensure high maintenance, to ensure ongoing security. So four components of the cost: gate control with security, the need, where we recommended early on, an on-site beach supervisor, enhanced maintenance of the upper and lower beach, and then costs for utilities, building maintenance, materials, supplies, parking lot machines, on and on and on. We came up with an estimate of about $260,000 a year for the operating costs of Bay Beach. And they're broken down in detail on the in the tables in the document and on the screen. So we've broken them down by staffing, the beach supervisor, the security, parking enforcement, beach and site maintenance. So these are just the operating costs with respect to staffing. And other costs, the utilities, the building maintenance, materials and supplies, parking lot machines, et cetera, et cetera. So this was a focus of much of John Linton's work, and we spent many, many hours as a team dissecting each one of the line items and trying to get that number, that bottom line number, right. Then we've gone through a detailed implementation schedule in association with our town staff team, gone through each line item, communication, funding, approvals, detailed design, the need to develop new policies and procedures, for example, with respect to beach admission, enhanced beach management, and we've plugged in our best estimates of timing for each one of those things over a two-year time period, 2016 and 2017. We go on with estimating timing for the private sector, selling the northeast lot, developing event parking agreements, and then construction, going through the key components of construction, a demolition, washroom, you can see all of the line items getting, and working around the beach season. So in the end, we absolutely believe that the Bay Beach Master Plan achieves the eight key directions that the community gave us on July 6th and 7th when we had our very first workshop, and that the plan really does balance passive use, active recreation use, environmental stewardship, environmental enhancement, opportunities for redevelopment in the northeast lot, making Crystal Beach, doing whatever we can to be a catalyst for revitalizing Crystal Beach. And we do think we have achieved broad-based community support. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hind. That was a very good presentation. Does any member of council have any questions or comments?
Yeah. I just wanted to commend Ms. Hind and her group. I can't tell you how frequently I saw you in the town hall here. I was expecting at some point that you'd be bringing in your sleeping bag, because you were here so frequently, but it's obviously paid off. This is a very comprehensive report, and your team and the focus group that you worked with, I know Councillors Zanko and McDermott were involved as well very much, and this is possibly the best consultation process that the town of Fort Erie has ever been through. I can't think of another one in my years of experience, and I'm sorry to say that there are many, but this is not only a very comprehensive report, but a lot of detail in how it can be implemented. And so often we hear about the municipality hiring consultants, getting reports, and then the reports get put on a shelf and nothing happens. That certainly doesn't appear to be what's going to happen here. So you and your group are to be commended. The individuals that have worked with you, I know some of them. I know them all now, but I knew some of them before. And your comment about Signy certainly had the CAO beaming in the back here. And I know that she's not the only staff that you would have had resort to. And I know the counselors here frequently are emailing our staff on weekends late at night, and I think we're shocked sometimes at the responses that we get at all hours of the day. So it's nice to hear someone from out of town make a comment of the nature that you did. So I thank you for that, but most especially thank you for the time and the energy and quality of this report. I obviously can tell I'm impressed by it. I'm sure that the other counselors are as well, but thank you very much for your work, and thank you to your team and all the individuals here who participated. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you. Councillor Nutt?
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair, to Ms. Hind. Thank you very much for the report. Very extensive, very well done, very well thought out. It's great to see what the possibilities could be of, you know, one of our great assets that we probably are underutilizing currently. I just have one question, which in your calculations, how much of the $260,000 ongoing yearly maintenance did you calculate out to be beach generated revenue all on its own without the tax dollars included? Can you give me a breakdown of what that split is?
So the slide in front of you, thank you very much for the question, relates to the amount of revenue that would be generated through the operation of the beach. So the admission fee charge that we're proposing would be the bulk of it, 173 of the 260. Then there would be some additional parking revenues. We're proposing doubling the existing parking fee to generate those revenues, and then some smaller amount of vendor permits, locker fees, and so forth. So that total amount is all beach-oriented.
Excellent. Okay. I just, because right now as the beach sits, it costs the town $75,000, and I think that this council's hope is that this becomes a revenue neutral where we don't have to take from the tax base to pay for this. So I think it's a great plan, and I just wanted clarification on that one point. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other councillors? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You'll make $3,000 off of me just buying sunscreen, Councillor Nutt. Thank you, Ms. Hind, for your presentation tonight. Just a question regarding the additional permits, the food truck permits, the additional vendor licenses. I know that there was an extensive amount, as the Mayor had already mentioned, of consultation. Has the Crystal Beach VIA been approached specifically on those topics?
Thank you. We did have an early discussion with the Crystal Beach BIA about the general principles underlying this, and they were certainly quite supportive. We didn't talk specifically about the notion of that vendor truck, but the idea of giving right of first refusal, in a sense, to current restaurateurs and so forth in the Crystal Beach area was very much supported by the BIA.
Okay. I appreciate those comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm not going to repeat what the Mayor had said, but obviously I support everything that he brought forward. But I just want to thank Donna, yourself, and your team. I've been involved, like the Mayor says, in some of the consultants that, you know, we get the reports and then, you know, things get lost and things don't seem to move forward. But I talked to some of the people that were involved in this process that have had extensive contact and communications with consulting firms.
And each of them has said that your firm did an outstanding job. So I just wanted to relay that to yourself, and maybe you could relay that back to your office and
I will.
Send that forward. But I look forward to council supporting this report, and hopefully we will work together on this project if things come up and we need to come back for some more consultation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lubritz. Any other councillors? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Hind. That moves us to reports. And the first report of the evening is CDS-05-2016, Development Application Process Timelines and Status. Can I have a mover, please?
So moved.
Thank you, Your Worship. That report is on the floor. Do any of my colleagues have any comments or questions, Your Worship?
I had some questions, and I spoke briefly to Mr. Brady beforehand. I'm wondering if we could maybe get some understanding of what's happening in other municipalities in terms of establishing time frames for the processing of applications.
Mr. Brady?
Certainly, through you to the mayor. As a little bit of background, the reason that the town of Fort Erie is bringing forth the timelines for development applications is a result of interest by the development community to have some idea on how long it takes for certain development applications to move through. It's been discussed at some length at the region so that they're hopefully throughout Niagara we would have some timelines. To start this off, last year I selected some timelines to see if they made sense, and that's what this report is about. It identified those ones which I used my best judgment to find, and then we tested them against reality. And the timelines that you have here are ones that we think are doable. They will press the staff, but they won't make the they won't put the staff in a position of not being able to be successful. There's one other municipality who has established timelines already in Niagara, and that is the town of Lincoln. They did in October. These timelines that we have are a little bit more aggressive than theirs, but they're within the same context. And the planning director from Lincoln and myself in the second quarter of this year will be presenting these, hopefully with the ratification of council tonight, to a broader group and trying to encourage, if you will, all of the communities in Niagara to establish some forms of timelines so that when the question is asked, so how long does it take on average to get a zoning bylaw amendment done in your town? The answer will be, 90 days.
So if I might, just for clarification, these timelines start to run from the moment that a completed application is submitted. So in other words, any dialogue that takes place with respect to whether the application is complete, not complete, whatever, that's prior to the beginning of the clock starting to run. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And do we have any, we maintain any records of when an individual first appears with an application, and then is able to submit a completed application? In other words, I guess I could articulate that a little better. If I come forward with an application, I'm told I need some more information. Do we keep a record of the first contact, or do we only start to record time when the application is deemed to be complete?
Through to the mayor, we formally keep track of when it's a complete application. We certainly have in the files the dates that the staff have met with potential applicants from time to time. And we will continue to try to hold that information. But if what you're suggesting is that we try to have that a little bit more formalized, we can do that. We can identify the first point of contact. But the time period between the first point of contact and a complete application can be very short or it can be very long, really very much dependent upon the applicant and the complexity of the issues.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair. And I see that some of the report indicates that some couple of timelines should be actually reduced. There's a couple that the recommendation that they be extended, and that's based on, as I understand it, the experience over the past year. I'm prepared to support these. I think we could probably maybe stretch ourselves a bit on some of them, but after having spoken to Mr. Brady, I think I'm content to go along with the recommendations and the proposed changes. But I would think it would be helpful if we did try to keep the record of first contact to the point of the clock starting to run, and maybe some notations of what happens between the first contact and when the clock starts to run, because I think frequently when I hear from people, and maybe it's the same with the rest of members of council, when we hear from members of the public, usually it's about the area between first contact and beginning of the processing of the application. So I think it would be terribly helpful, because next year, as I understand it, we'll be reviewing this again. I think it would be helpful if we had that additional information to see what kind of process improvements we might be able to make for that period. Because if you're an individual who's looking to get an approval, you're really thinking about when you first came to the counter. And so if we can reduce that time, I think then that shows that we're really helping the individuals or the developers to get over that hump, which is an issue that I think we can be helpful with. And I know that many times staff is helpful, but I'm prepared to support the recommendations. I would like to see some additional information when we get this review next year at this time.
Your Worship, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady. I was wondering if we could see something similar, some similar goal setting when it comes to the permitting process. I received some calls last year from constituents who had concerns that there were lags in the time for people getting their inspections done and to proceed with their building permits. So I understand that some of it may be their end, some of it might have been on our end, but is there some type of goal setting that we'll see for the permitting or the inspection end of the permitting process?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councillor Nutt. Yes, we can bring back a memo to council, and I'll ask our chief building official to do so, to outline what the timelines are that have been set for the permitting process. It depends upon the specific type of permit, and I will undertake to have that brought back to council in a memo form.
Councillor Passera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appendix 1 of the report lists the different processing timelines, and after each day there's an asterisk, and the devil's always in the asterisk. And it says target timelines that would be met in 90% of applications, and I know what that stands for, because if you read through the report, it states that based on historical data, in 90% of the cases, staff are able to meet these timelines. But I'm wondering if that just stands as is, and I'm a potential developer looking at that, I think, well, I certainly hope mine's in one of the 90%. How do I know? I wonder if we could kind of put a positive spin and maybe reference that historical data shows the town meets these timelines in over 90% of the cases or something like that. Because at first glance, my question is, well, how do I know if I'm in the 90%? Or how do I know if I'm shuffled into the 10? I know what planning is saying by putting that sentence in there, but I think it sends kind of a mixed message and almost kind of is counterintuitive to what we're trying to put out there.
Mr. Brady?
Yes, I have no issue with that. I think that's great. We're attempting to try to make everyone understand that it's that once in a while things go awry. We hope that isn't the case very often. But I think it would be useful then to the Appendix 1 if we simply add a little sentence to the effect of that historically we have met this criteria, and I'll have that added if council seems to see that as fit.
I would appreciate that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just one question on the site plan approval. It says here that the we have met the 90-day time frame, and I don't see anything in here where any mention at all of the timeline that's legislated through the Planning Act. Now, over the last term of council, we ran into some issues with the site plan approvals, and that's what we were told, that it was legislated. So what is the actual legislation when it comes to site plan approval, and are we saying here that we're going to do it quicker? Is is the 90 day, is that what's legislated?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Lubberts. The Planning Act has certain legislated timelines within it in terms of how long we need to give public consultation, how long before we can take things to council, how long we have to give notice. There are a whole series of items that do that. And those, if you will, provide the framework for the minimum shortness that we can never remove processes down to. However, and I mistook when I said this in the past, there are no timelines in the Planning Act that identify how fast you have to do something. There are in the Building Code. The Building Code is a different duck, and we'll deal with that with the memo that I had already promised. But these timelines that are here are taken into consideration the requirements of the Planning Act, and we're trying to provide what we believe are reasonable timelines, but that are quick timelines. So, for example, the site plan approval that you'd mentioned, and we've identified it. We had originally had it identified as 90 days, but based on the good work of Jeremy and others, we realized that 80 days is quite possible. And that's great. I can tell you, based on discussions I've had recently, that if you were moving outside of Niagara and you tried to deal with a site plan approval in the GTA, you'd be looking at something in the area of about 2.5 years. So this timeline that's identified here is a very aggressive timeline, and it is one which we know we can meet in the vast majority of cases.
Yes, thank you very much. So basically what I'm hearing here is if a developer submits his site plan for approval, there is nothing there that says we have to approve it within 30 days or within 90 days. That's not in the Planning Act, but is that in the Building Code?
Brady?
There's nothing that I know of in the Planning Act that identifies a minimum timeline for the site plan. There are guidelines within the building code for the issuance of building permits once a complete application is put in. And again, Keegan will be bringing back a memo on that to council in the very near future.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Brady. Just a quick question and a comment. I do support and have to agree with what Mayor Redekop had mentioned regarding the timelines. But out of curiosity, you mentioned that you do keep track from the initial call a log is made. Is there any type of follow-up being done if we see that several months have gone by from the initial contact that was made and we still haven't seen the application? Is staff in a position to follow up with those developers?
Mr. Brady?
Through you to Councillor Zanko. It would be on an informal basis. We certainly don't on a formal basis say after, every 30 days, that's just a number I picked out of thin air, would we get back to a developer or a member of the public for that matter. If I have from time to time on certain projects, which I have just my own interest in, phoned up a developer and said, oh, how's it going, or something to that effect. But it's very informal. We certainly don't have any formal process by which we remind developers, oh, we've met with you. Are you bringing in an application?
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments or questions, Your Worship?
I just had one other question or suggestion, and that is when we get the report that deals with the coming year's progress, maybe we could get some information as to why those few applications that didn't get responded to, in other words, the 10% that didn't make it, if there were specific reasons as to why, so that we've got that information as well. That would be helpful.
Mr. Brady?
That's an interesting, yes, it's an observation, and I will certainly be happy to do that. And Ms. Dolch is smiling over there because originally I had wanted that as part of this report, but in the methodologies of Mrs. Dolch, she thought, well, why don't we just let it go the first time, because some of the reasons that some of these are delayed may be embarrassing to others, and it might be best to at least make it be well known that in the future that we would be announcing those things. So that's great. We will certainly put that on our agenda, and the one or two reports or one or two projects that slip through the cracks, we'll certainly be able to identify, you know, from staff's perspective, why they had slipped through the cracks.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Next, we come to report number CDS-06-2016, Bay Beach Master Plan. Can I have a mover for that? Councillor Zanko. That report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the okay. Councillor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just one question on the report itself on the agenda. The rezoning and the sale of 4152 Erie Road, just to clarify, just so everybody knows, anybody reading the report, that's the northeast corner property of the entire package, right? Am I correct with that?
Mr. Brady, can you confirm that?
Through you, Madam Chair, I can confirm that, yes. We're looking at the northeast property.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions, Your Worship?
Yes, and I'm glad that Signe's at the podium there. I did want to compliment her on this report. It's a very good report. I'm sure that it's you and a group, because this is very comprehensive. I like the very many action recommendations. I've got one question which I'll get to shortly, but I did also want to say that it's very, very important for the community and the community groups to get behind this, because we're talking mega dollars, and we're going to need all the community support that we can get. We're going to do what we can do, but much support from the community possible. And I banged that drum at the last workshop, but I don't want people to forget that. This isn't just the town. This is the community, and we're hoping that this will be the catalyst that will help to further revitalize Crystal Beach. I did have one question, Madam Chair, and that relates to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth, that it's at the bottom of page 4 of our agenda that's been printed, and it says that council directs staff to pursue the sale of the municipal property known as 4152 Erie Road following its rezoning, and authorizes staff to undertake the sale of the property through alternate methods as identified in this report. I'm wondering if this shouldn't come back to council for approval with respect to the parameters of sale. And I don't know whether that's something Ms. Hansen would respond to, or Mr. Brady.
Mr. Brady?
certainly through you to the mayor. What we're trying to do with the two that's is we're trying to set up a process, the process being the rezoning of the property to the uses that have been identified, and then to turn it around and to try and to sell the property. So we're suggesting that under those circumstances that staff be authorized to undertake the sale. If what I'm hearing you suggest is that you'd like at that point us to come back with a report after it has been rezoned, and then identify alternative ways to move forward with the sale, then I would suggest that the that would need to be amended, and that that amendment would have to be approved by council, and then at that point in time we would be happy to do it in that fashion. We're very much trying to set a process through, and you identified it clearly in your comments, of how to move ahead with this. And so each of these is sequenced in a fashion to try to move ahead in a quick fashion. The sale of the of this property is a critical factor in terms of providing the capital to revitalize the site. And it provides a significant portion of the town's contribution towards the capital, and particularly in reflection to making the case to the regional municipality of Niagara that we have in fact put our money into the table, and therefore we want the region to put their money into the table.
And I certainly don't want to slow the process up, but I'm thinking that council may want to have some understanding of what the proposed sale price will be, what the alternative methods will be. I know that they're referred to in the report somewhat, but I, for one, think that it should come, at least that item should come back to council. If there are others that don't have a concern, that's fine. But if to anybody except Councillor Butler shaking her head. So maybe we should move that item be subject to council approval. Do you see, if I might, Madam Chair, Mr. Brady, do you see any problem with that? Do you see any reason why that couldn't come back to council so that we've got an understanding of what's being recommended in terms of sale price and methods for sale?
No, I have no problem with it being with it coming back to council at a future date. But I do hope that it doesn't become a knotty point, because the capital that we need from this is important to contribute to the development of the overall Bay Beach property.
I somewhat see that going in tandem with the rezoning, so that by the time, I mean, as we're working through the rezoning of the property, we can also, I'm sure that staff will also be looking at what the alternative methods are and what the value of that property will be. Obviously, we've got some understanding of that. So I would think that would come about at the same committee meeting. So I'd like to move that item 6 be subject to council approval.
Okay, that amendment is on the floor. Are there any speakers to that amendment? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much. I think I understand where the mayor is going with this, but I'm just wondering if it were to be left the way it is, and because there has to be a rezoning, and maybe when the rezoning happens, that's when all these things will happen. So when the rezoning happens, then we can move forward with having more information about the sale and how the alternatives are going to be. But for now, I think we should direct staff to move forward with it. I don't see that it's necessary right now to make that amendment for council's approval, because it's going to have to come to council for the rezoning process anyway. I see Mr. Ludstick wants to make a comment. I think
Mr. Ludstick
Cook wants to make a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The matter would have to come back to council in any case, because eventually you're going to end up with an agreement of purchase and sale That has to be authorized by council, so you'll have an opportunity to deal with the sale at a later date in any case.
At the end. Sure, if I might. I understand that. I think it would be helpful if we knew exactly what was going out. So it's true that this is going to have to go through a rezoning process, and I'm thinking that when the recommendations for that are dealt with by this council, staff is probably going to be in a position to say, and by the way, here's how we recommend that this property be sold, here's what we suggest the listing price be, or whatever, so that we've got a handle on that at the beginning, because right now, if we approve this, I have no idea what the sale price will be, and I just think that I should. I think that we should participate in establishing what that price is. Not to suggest that staff isn't knowledgeable and very competent. It's just that I think that's part of our responsibility.
Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I agree that it is part of our responsibility, no doubt about that, but I think when we had some discussion earlier, the price is based on the zoning, the price of the property. So if staff were to provide us with sale and all the other things and the information that is required, it was going to have to give us that report based on the zoning that it has today. I think we need to move through the process, and as the process gets moved forward, then we get more and more information. I don't know that we get it at the end when we have no time to discuss it. We have lots of time to discuss it at the rezoning process. That could be included in the report when we do the rezoning also. So I don't see any why it would be necessary to change it tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. Any other comments? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the Mayor's motion. In the report, it lists that staff have already had several contacts with developers, so I don't see this as adding any hindrance whatsoever. I think this will still move the process along. I think it's well-defined within the report that we're looking at a certain area of rezoning. It's just a matter of figuring out specifics at this point. So I think to go the path that the mayor is suggesting, I don't think complicates matters or delays them for any means. And if it provides council with any additional information, then I'm all in favor of that.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I will call the question on the amendment. All those in favor? Motion carried. Any further speakers to the motion as amended? Seeing none. Oh, Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I just want to make a couple comments on the fact that this report is finally here in front of council for its approval, and I'm anticipating that it will be approved tonight. I think what I would like to do first is just thank all the people that have been involved with this whole Bay Beach process from the beginning. And I think we can go back to when Mayor Redicott was the mayor previously, and we purchased the property, and there was a lot of anticipation from the community that we were finally going to own our own waterfront. And we moved through the process of the neighborhood plan, and then we moved through the process of the Bay Beach issue. And it's been a contentious issue, and it's also been an issue that has brought the community together in different ways. I don't know that you can remember any time when there has been consultation on Bay Beach. Now, we talked earlier tonight about how comprehensive the Bay Beach Master Plan is and the time that everybody took to go through it. But the whole process was very comprehensive. We spent 10 years or more on deciding what we're going to do with Bay Beach. and I'm finally here, and we're all here to say thank you to Signe Hansen, thank you to staff, thank you to all the people in the community that supported one way or another and worked towards where we are today. And I want to thank Planning Partnership again, and I want to thank council, this council. I want to thank the previous councils that were involved, not just the one that just passed, but the one that started the whole process back in early 2000. And I just like to thank everybody, and I'm looking forward to this year being approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. Any other comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. That moves us to report number CDS 07-2016, phased site plan approval process information report. Can I have a mover? Councillor Pissarro. That report is now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much. Just looking at in the background of the report, it talks about approving and agreeing on a site plan or in principle. And if there's an agreement in principle, is that binding on anything if something comes forward later that, well, maybe we see some details now that we didn't know of at the beginning? Does it bind council or does it bind the town of Fort Erie at that time so that they can't say to themselves, well, you know, we decided that we're not going to go forward with this?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Lubert. Whenever we, the municipality signs a site plan with a developer or a public agency for that matter, it does. It binds both parcels or both parties in that there is a subdivider, there is a site plan, and there's an agreement that goes with it. So whether or not it's going to bind us, yes, it does. As we move forward, what this provides us the opportunity to do is when we think it's appropriate that enough is in place for us to feel comfortable to be able to sign that site plan, but that there are one or two outstanding items which wouldn't, in our understanding, cause a significant issue to the site plan. The best way I can explain it is through an example. The property across the street with the school site, as we went through the site plan process, everything was basically in place, but there was some further discussions with the region about the actual engineering that dealt with the connections to the site. So everything's in place, but those details are still being identified. If we had this process in place, what we would have been able to do is to give site plan approval subject to those issues being resolved, which in the case of the school across the street would have allowed site plan approval to be about 2 months earlier than it actually was. Once we have a site plan approved, we can then issue a building permit. And that means even the phase site plan, once approved, we can issue the building permit. So on the site across the street, we held on to the building permit. We could have issued the building permit. Everything was done for the building permit, but it couldn't be issued until the actual site plan was signed. So I was actually on vacation at the time. I had delegated the ability to sign the site plan to Jeremy. Jeremy phoned me and said, I'm doing it. I said, go do it. So he signed it, and then Keegan identified the building permit the exact next day. We could have had the building permit issued a couple months earlier under the process that I'm identifying. This process that we're identifying with this report is not one that we would be using all the time. And it's really a process that we want to use on the big projects which have something that can kick it near the end. A good example is the high school. A better example is CMS. And I very much want to be able to be in a position with Canadian Motor Speedway that if it's subject to something which is what we believe is minor, that doesn't hold up the actual site plan and the subdivision process. So it provides us with another tool in our tool chest. Hamilton does this all the time. It seems to work quite well for them. St. Catharines has started to do it. The way they do it isn't exactly the way we want to do it, but nonetheless, it works for them, and we're trying to use the methodology which Hamilton has in place.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Brady. On page 3 of the report, the 8 points that are there, is that what we're recommending that we move forward with? Because I'm a little confused as to the fourth point, 4A, when it says authority to give conditional approval has been delegated to the Director of Community and Development Services under bylaw number 2013-36. Do we already have this in place that you have the authority to give conditional approval?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Roberts. I have delegated approval to approve site plans and site plan agreements. What I'm bringing to Council's attention is and I'd like your approval of it, is a slight modification to the way I may deal with it in certain times in the future. The process that we've outlined on page 3, 1 through 8, as you've identified, is the process that we would use when we're dealing with phase site plan approval. So Council can see, oh, I see, this is how we would actually deal with it at that point in time. So that outlines how it is. Do you need to give me approval for this? No, but I would feel gratitude if Council receives this report and therefore would give blessing to the fact that we'll be utilizing a new methodology.
Yes, well, thank you very much. But what's with bylaw, the bylaw, 036-213, conditional approval? It says here that you already have conditional approval. That's what I'm getting at. Do you need more additional approval?
Through you to Councilor Lubert. I have approval to do this as it sits through this bylaw, as we've determined.
However, conditional approval.
Yeah, however, it's not something that we've done in the past. I thought it was quite relevant to bring it to Council's attention. And if Council felt that this was inappropriate, certainly let me know. And we wouldn't carry on in that fashion. But nonetheless, there isn't a need for you to give me further approval to do it, but I'm clearly identifying that there is an alternative way that we will be moving forward with site plan approval, particularly on the large projects.
Okay, thank you very much. Going on with the same, on the same page, page 3, 5A, as if conditional approval has been granted, the applicant will be provided a letter. I think maybe my question goes back to our timelines that we just discussed earlier in an earlier report. Does this conditional approval start the 90-day timeline that you were discussing in the earlier report, or is this conditional just to get the developer or the owner to the next position, and then the site plan would come forward after that, then you would work on your 90 days?
Through to Councilor Lubert. 90 days has started at the beginning of this process when we've received all information. What we're talking about is the date by which final approval would be given. So final approval would be given once the conditions are met, but the developer would receive a letter from the municipality signed by myself saying that you have conditional approval for your site plan, therefore you can go ahead and ask for your building permit.
Okay, thank you very much. Now my last question, same page. Just after the last bullet there, the eighth, what paragraph? The second paragraph, I guess. it was the intent of staff that the phased site plan approval would only be used on large-scale projects like the high schools and the Canadian Motor Speedways. But where does the large scale start? Like, what size of a project would end the small scale and start the large scale? And I understand the Canadian Motor Speedway, but that's a major, major project. Where, what would be considered the beginning of the large scale?
Brady?
At this moment in time, staff have not provided any criteria for the establishment of what large scale would mean. And basically, I'm going on the basis that something that staff think is large scale. Now, if a developer felt that it was large scale and we didn't think so, we could sit down, have a conversation about that and move it forward. But what I don't see is I don't see this being used on a five lot site plan for a townhouse.
All right, thank you very much. Now we're receiving the SEER report for information today. Is that correct? So when we when you bring that forward, the report forward, can we have something in there that identifies what large scale is and what the smaller scale is? The only reason I'm saying that is we have the same thing with like monster homes. We discussed that earlier this year or last year, late last year, about monster homes. And so we have that identified. I think that was in our official plan. So now if we're going to have something like this here, I think it would be a good idea for so that we understand council and future councils and people that move forward and do their due diligence and read what's required and what can get conditional approval so that they understand what where they're at and where it begins. Is that possible, Mr. Brady?
Mr. Brady?
Absolutely. This report is before you this evening to receive, mm-hmm. and if it's received, then we will be moving forward with using this approach. What I will do is I will prepare a memo to council, to Mayor and Council, on what parameters will be involved in determining large scale in terms of site plans. And I'll provide that to council.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other councillors? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Next report is CDS-08-2016 Short-Term House Rentals Licensing Report. Can I have a mover? Councillor Passero, that report is now on the floor. Any comments or questions? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This issue was brought forward by Councillor McDermott. I know he's being plagued with difficulties, and I'd like to defer this until the next CDS subcommittee meeting so that he can participate in that conversation.
Okay, so that's been deferred. We'd like to, right. So you're just deferring it to the next council and committee meeting, is that correct?
Yes, the next CDS subcommittee meeting, because the next council and committee meeting, I believe, will not be CDS. So it's the next CDS subcommittee meeting.
Subcommittee meeting. 5th of January, February 1st.
February 1st.
February 1st. Okay, some back and forth comments being played. So that motion now has been deferred. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of deferring that report, motion carried. Next report is CDS-09-2016, Uncontested Applications for Consents. Can I have a mover? Zanko, Councillor Zanko. Thank you. That report is now on the floor. Any questions or comments? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I guess on page 3, this whole process that we decided, you can see here that there was a motion made by the Committee of Adjustments, right? And they support the uncontested consent applications, and they supported it. That was carried. Now, this is the changes that need to be made. And I'm just wondering, as the Committee of Adjustment reviewed the uncontested application, the rest of the wording that's going to be changed to change these bylaws.
Mr. Brady?
To Councilor Lubert, the report that's before you this evening has not been reviewed by the Committee of Adjustment. The notions of having these particular kinds of technical severances dealt with in an alternative way has been before them, and we had quite a discussion on that at the time, and they were completely in favor of it moving forward. But to answer your specific question, was this report actually provided to the Committee of Adjustment prior to it coming to Council? The answer is no.
I'm just wondering if it would be a good idea for them to at least review it just to make sure that that's where they were at. I know the Mayor sits on that committee, and I know the Committee of Adjustments. All right. Maybe we could get the comment from maybe the CAO or I know what they approved, and I just want to make sure that what they approved, this is what they're looking at.
Cricket? Through chair to the councillor, I haven't been part of any discussions with the committee. Mr. Brady would know more. So if it's your wish to table this until I have an opportunity to read the report, then council can do that. I wouldn't recommend it. I think it's pretty straightforward, to be honest with you.
Your worship would like to speak to this?
Right. This report basically follows what they've, the resolution that they've passed, the recommendation that they've made. So the reason these would be uncontested is that it's highly unlikely anyone is going to make presentation with respect to these. These are situations where somebody needs a sent so they can discharge part of their mortgage, as an example, or they want to enter into a lease agreement that's in excess of 21 years, so they would need consent. It's highly unlikely that anyone is going to object, but and if they don't, then this provides a speedy process to move forward. So this is completely in line with the recommendation that the Committee of Adjustment has passed, and the notices that would go out which are attached as appendix, or which is attached as appendix one, I guess, will provide notification to those who receive notice what this is about and that they've got to respond within the time frames indicated. So I don't know what further comment the Committee of Adjustment would make with respect to this. This is completely in line with what.
Okay. All right, just thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Going to this uncontested applications, and I'm just a little confused as to where we're at here, because I think on page 3, what we're seeing here is everything uncontested applications that's highlighted there or capitalized and bolded. That is what changes are going to be made. Is that correct?
Through you to Councilor Lubert, in answer to your question, what is being defined as uncontested applications are, as the Mayor had indicated those which are lease agreements or mortgages or easements only. And there's a protocol that's been set out. So what happens is that the applications are filed in exactly the same way, but the ability to have them approved in advance of the Committee of Adjustment meeting is being proposed, as long as there are nobody who comes forward during the period of time which is prescribed suggesting that they want to speak to the Committee of Adjustment. So what would happen is that under those circumstances, the Secretary Treasurer of the Committee of Adjustment would bring them to my attention, and I would be in the position then to sign them. They would still have an appeal period, and so if somehow someone who had wanted to and showed up at the Committee of Adjustment says, oh, nah, and they still wanted to appeal it, the appeal period is still there, but that appeal period would be run out before the appeal period after the Committee of Adjustment. So all this does is provide for relatively technical severances to be moved through the process quicker, as long as no one has any opposition to the or even any comment proposed severance.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just to move forward with that there, all of that being said, I see where this is going, and I don't have a problem with it personally. But just some of the way that I'm reading this has got me a little confused as to exactly what we're saying here, because with the uncontested application, what I'm reading is if it's uncontested, then we'll move forward with it. But then under appeals, it says that whether or not the application is approved and signed by the Committee of Adjustments or the Director of Community and Development Services, then you still have the 20-day period to appeal. Now, if it's uncontested, are we giving them the approval, or is it still within the Mr. Brady can still say, no, I'm not going to give the approval? Can he deny the approval if it's uncontested? That's basically where I'm at.
Mayor Redicott?
So the way this works is someone's going to come to the town hall with an application for consent because they need to get a partial discharge of their mortgage for whatever reason. As the report says, because that doesn't really involve any change in boundaries, most of the neighbors aren't going to be concerned. It's really an internal matter. When they show up with their application, notice will be given in the usual course. And the only difference will be that this particular notice will have the red notations that are that appear in Appendix 1. So that whoever receives the notice is advised that if you have an objection, you have to let the town hall know within 14 days. Otherwise, this will go through as uncontested. So it's very much like any proceeding in court. A document is served on someone that's started a legal action. If the person doesn't respond, then it goes through an uncontested process. So that's what will happen here. But the determination won't be made as to whether it's contested or uncontested until at least the 14 days have passed after notification has been given to the neighbors. At that stage of the game, if no one has objected to the application, or if no one has provided comments that would suggest that it needs to go before the Committee of Adjustments, then the director can say this is uncontested. There's no need for it to go before the Committee of Adjustments because no one's going to show up. So it will go through as an uncontested and will be approved as an uncontested consent. I believe that the Planning Act still provides that there is an appeal period. And so therefore, whether it's uncontested or not, that appeal period would still be applicable. Hard to imagine that someone might object, but a scenario would be and this was a question I was going to raise, agency that receives notice and is entitled to make comments doesn't respond within 14 days. And frequently they do respond at the very last minute, so they respond at 20 days. 20 days they've responded, this thing's already been approved, it's an issue she is, they can appeal if they wish. That's how. So what it really does is it. This is a higher level of service and a quicker response for individuals who really have a non-contentious matter, but they do have to get the consent because the Planning Act says it's required under the circumstances.
Yes, thank you very much, and that's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Zobert. Yes.
And then I asked that question about is there any concern on the part of staff that agencies may not respond within the 14 days? Because I know that sometimes they are last minute.
For Brady?
Through the mayor, the question was, is there any concern on staff? The answer is no. However, judgment must always be used in these matters. And if I think that it's appropriate to make a phone call, I'll certainly do so.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I will call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Next report is CDS-10-2015, disposition of 1952 Chevrolet Rescue Van. Can I have a mover? Thank you, Mayor Redicott. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. That ends the report session. On to new business inquiries. And we have a memorandum from Larry Copeland, our fire chief. Any questions or comments? Councillor Passero?
Just wanted to thank Mr. Copeland for providing that information. His last paragraph says that staff is recommending that the Town of Fort Erie continue to participate in these discussions. Madam Chair, does that take a direction from Council, or is that just a heads up that they'll continue to do that? I'm just wondering what we'd need to do to keep
Mr.
that process
Copeland?
Moving.
Without further direction, I will continue to have these discussions unless Council directs me otherwise.
Welcome. Any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, we move on to business status report. Any comments? Oops. Yes.
I just wanted to go back to the building permit fees and the presentation that we had earlier. And maybe get from Mr. Brady, if I could, Madam Chair, some clarification as to how that proceeds. Is there a bylaw that's coming forward? Is there some resolution that we're going to be dealing with, or is this an automatic adjustment unless we say otherwise?
Mr. Brady?
Through the mayor, there will be a bylaw that will be brought forward at the next meeting. The report that outlined the overall changes were part of the finance report, which I believe was the council a few weeks ago, which outlined a series of adjustments to a wide range of fees. But because of the specifics of the Building Code Act, it was required to have this public meeting this evening.
So, Madam Chair, I suppose I'll wait till the bylaw comes forward. I'm actually torn. These aren't large increases by any stretch of the imagination. They simply take into account inflation. But I'm wondering if, until we get the information that Mr. Jennings is going to provide us with respect to neighboring communities, he did give us some information. It sounds like we're higher than one, I don't know, other. I know that there were a number of years that went by where there was no increase and that required some catch up. I don't like the idea of having to bring in large scale increases every 4 or 5 years on the one hand. On the other hand, I just want to make sure that we remain competitive. And we frequently hear that, people are burdened by the modest tax increase. They're burdened by the modest water increase. They're burdened by, so that cumulatively becomes significant. I just don't want us to get into a position where, even though this is modest, and maybe this isn't the place where we draw the line, I thought I'd express at least some concern that I have regarding this. And I'd even mention to or asked Mr. Brady whether we had ever contemplated some type of, if we can target a group that we would like to move into, build roots in town, such as young families, whether we would ever contemplate perhaps some type of rebate on building permit fees, something of that nature. And that's when he began to tear his hair out. So I'm thinking along those lines that maybe there are some things that we can do to encourage, although I know that we're doing a lot of things right now, and certainly the reports that we had tonight talking about time frames with respect to approval processes, that's all very important, and it certainly does encourage development. And I'm thinking out loud, and I'm not thinking very cogently, but that's kind of what's in my mind. We're going to look forward to see what Mr. Jennings can provide us in terms of comparators, and then when this comes before us in the format of a bylaw, I'm not sure that I will be supportive on this, but we'll wait and see.
I might.
Mr. Brady.
The fees bylaw will be omnibus, if you will, in that it won't just be including the building permits fees, and I believe that it will be coming to council next week. And so just be aware of that for information. I will speak to Mr. Jennings tomorrow to try to make sure that that information that you want is out to you well in advance of that time. But there won't be a specific building fees bylaw. It's all part of the larger bylaw. Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else for new business inquiries? Okay. We'll move on to business status report. Any comments or questions with respect to that? Seeing none, that completes Community and Development Services, Your Worship.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. And that then takes us to Corporate Services and Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Corporate Services is now in session. Do I have a mover for report CAO01LC01-2016? Councillor Butler, are there any questions or comments with regard to this report? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That carries. That brings us to report CS01-2016-LC26-2015. Can I get a mover for this report? Councillor Passero, are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I will call the question. All those in favor? That carries. And that concludes the corporate service portion. I'll hand the chair back to you.
Two very efficient committees dealt with their matters very well this evening. Scheduling of meetings. Do we have meeting? We have a budget meeting Wednesday evening starting at 6 o'clock. Joy of joys. Any other Councillor Passero and then Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Tomorrow here at Town Hall, Committee Room Number 1, 40 Active Transportation Committee at 5:30 p.m. And on behalf of Councillor McDermott's, a Bridgeburg BIA meeting tomorrow night starting at 6 p.m. Upstairs at Penn Financial Credit Union.
Thank you. Councillor Zanko.
Yes, we have a cemetery committee meeting tomorrow here in Conference Room 1 at 5 p.m. We also have a corporate services meeting next Monday, January 18th at 11 a.m. at Town Hall.
Say January 14th.
No. 18th. Thank you. Oh, and actually, I just remembered another one. There's a street naming committee meeting tomorrow here at 5 p.m. as well in Conference Room 3.
Any other meetings? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. There's a meeting of Infrastructure Business Subcommittee on January 13th. That's this Wednesday at 4 p.m. in Conference Room 3. And there's a meeting with Communities in Bloom Wednesday, January 13th. That's this Wednesday at 5:30 here at the Town Hall. Conference Room 3 also.
Anyone else? Any other meetings? There being none, then Councillor Nutt, would you like to move that we adjourn?
I certainly would, Your Worship. The Council and Committee meeting for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 8:10 p.m. to resume in our next scheduled meeting of committee and council. Actually, we got the next regular council meeting on Monday.
All those in favor? And opposed, that is carried.